Welcome, everybody. I am Coach Lisa, and I am here tonight to introduce the amazing Coach Susie Haley. She is going to be talking to you tonight. She is going to be coaching you tonight. It will be a great night for raising your hand to be coached. And there we go, Susie. I am going to invite Susie up here as a panelist, and you all know she is a master certified coach. She has her bachelor in science in kinesiology, and I will let her tell you everything else that you need to know. So thank you so much, Susie, for being here tonight. Just need to unmute, and you need to unmute.
Yes, I know. I
There you
forgot.
go, and I will let you have the floor.
Awesome. I am so grateful to be here. I worked with No BS a couple years ago, and it was just so much fun to integrate a lot of the principles that I teach in terms of helping people reduce pain and get stronger again. And what you are learning inside of the program around eating and starting when you're hungry and stopping at enough. So we are talking about movement and about getting back to moving. And I'm thrilled to be able to kind of introduce you into this program that I've created for No BS. And so I think that the big place that I want to begin is wherever you are, whether you are someone who it's been a while since you've moved, or whether you are like you've made some great gains and you're like, okay, what's my next? Or I don't want to fall back to where I was. Or maybe you're like a little bit older and it's like, uh-oh, am I too old to start now? And is it just, do I have enough mileage, enough time left to even start? And so you might sort of find yourself in one of those spaces, and wherever you are, that you're there's no place about being broken or about being behind, or like you're in the right place. A lot of people can get very sort of wound up about like what exercising they should be doing, whether it's Pilates or HIIT or walking, or can I do any of that stuff because of my knees or because of my back or because I'm stiff all over? And the reality is we just want to just start off with is to ask you, like, where are you at in your mind and in your body around movement? And so if you could just post into the chat for me, like, are you scared to move? Are you afraid about pain? Are you not sure what to do? Do you find yourself uncertain about doing something and if it will create pain? Are there exercise activities? And we're just going to keep to movement for now. I've got another question about some of the things you really want to be able to do if you can move better. But if you're like, if you're thinking about like yoga or Pilates or just general exercise, what's in your brain about it? Knowing I should, but I don't really do it. I'm in PT for SI bone issues. I'm afraid to do things that might make it worse. I'm afraid of injury being 74. I'm morbidly obese. Movement is a challenge. Pain is a fear. Yes. Total knee. I'm assuming that's a replacement, Annette. Won't let me get down to my knees. Okay. And I'm wondering, Annette, do you know about the total knee replacement? I'm just going to toss a little idea in here. Is it because of the mechanics that were inputted into the knee that they just won't let you get down to the floor? Or is it that you don't haven't regained the mobility to be able to get down to the floor? Because there's two things there. One is that there are some of the mechanics of like the new knees that are being given, that limit the mobility quite a bit and really enable people to walk and to walk like and not do a lot else. And I'm just curious of the knee hurts when I put force on it. Okay, so it's not the mechanics. It might be some movement stuff in there. Okay, great. I'm afraid if hurting my knees with strength training. Okay, great. I'm scared because I've overdone it in the past and caused a flare in my autoimmune disease. Okay. Bone on bone knee, so I'm better on the bike than walking. I have to lose a bit more before surgery. I had a stroke last year at 49. Okay. Also in PT, knees, hip bursitis, pinched nerve in the back, arthritis in the hip, and my mobility has really suffered in the last year. Mobility, interesting. Also out of breath if I walk half a block. Okay, mobility. Well, that's the same post. History of shin splints that flare up when I walk a lot. Need small, easy movements. I have limited walking, bad knees, and hips. Okay, scared because I've overdone it in the past and caused a flare. Oh, yeah, autoimmune disease. Yeah. Okay, I've lost flexibility and I'd like to get some back. Not sure where to start. Yoga seems to be too much for me these days. Yes. Okay. Working my back from a series of unfortunate events. Thanks, Roz. I'm afraid of hurting my knees if I strength train. Post heart attack knee pain. I want to start strength training, but don't know where to start and how to do it safely. Okay, you're in the right place. You are all in the right place. I love it. Love exercising, but a reoccurring knee injury acts up, and then I have a setback, and then I feel discouraged. Yes, makes sense. Got a knee replacement on one knee. I'm not sure what to do, and yes, I'm scared of injury. Oh, you're in the right place, Mira. Totally. Oh yeah, won't let me get on the floor. No, I should, but don't really know. Okay, you are all in the right place. Oh, I love you all. You are so in the perfect, perfect, perfect place. As Roz can attest, she's on this call, and a few others can attest. You are my jam. I love you guys. Yes, even when I say I can't get down to the floor and I can't kneel because I'm making knee replacements. Yes, okay, great. Exercise can exacerbate chronic pain. Yes, it can. Chronic muscle soreness and tiredness for 40 years. Walking 45 minutes is fine. Can't go heavier than 5 pounds. Okay, I've had botched knee replacement. My knee will never be back to 100, and I have 3 bad discs in my back, arthritis in my back, so bending is difficult. Okay. All right, water therapy. I'm mobile and want to stay that way for a long time. Okay, Christy, great place. Ripped ligaments in one knee 25 years ago, multiple surgeries, also super early menopause. So now, or you had an early menopause, so now at 55, you lost osteoporosis, wedging and microfractures in the spine. So there's lots of fear. Yes, I totally understand that, Kathy. And I actually train yoga teachers in how to help people with osteoporosis. So you're in the right place. Working on reducing my inflammation, especially around the knees. Okay, so really, you've got, you know what? Like reading this makes a lot of sense that there's a lot of fear in the room. Like, let's just call it what it is, right? Like, there is, like, fear is in the room. And I'm just reading one more. I'm having one more that came in through the Q&A. I'm having trouble doing anything with my abdominal muscles after babies and separated ab muscles. I can't do a simple sit-up without using my groin or my back, which I know is wrong, but how do I start moving the core gently? Yes, great. Perfect. You're in the right place. And that's what, and you keep hearing me say this, you're in the right place. So I started off with a like of saying of leading out with this, like what I do and what I love so much about this group is that you've already learned the piece about how to listen for your hunger cues and when to stop it enough, right? And you might be training that habit, but you've learned it, right? Like it's in your space. And what I'm teaching is very, very similar to that. And there can be this, I think the first thing to play with is that when there is pain and we aren't sure what that pain is going to do or what it means, then that fear response goes way up. And when the fear response goes way up, it really clouds the way that we think about anything. And so then the choices that we make are made out of a cloudiness and not like clarity, if I could put it that way. So if a part of the way along is to start small and to start easy. And if you've got a thought process in your head that's saying something like, well, if I start easy, I'm not doing enough, it totally makes sense that that thought is present. And when you start easy, then what, and you are successful at easy, then that sends up a signal to our noggin that says, hey, guess what? That was easy. Like, remember that easy button at Staples years ago? It truly was, that was easy. And then we have this thought pattern of like, oh, that was easy. Even if you got another one that goes, yeah, but that was too easy. Even if you got all that like peanut gallery stuff, you still had that one thought of like, huh, that was actually easy. And then that leads you to doing the next easy thing. And then that leads you to do the next easy thing, and the next easy thing, and the next easy thing. And then all of a sudden, you've done a bunch of easy things. And some of that peanut gallery has stopped chattering so much. And you're recognizing that you can do easy things. Now, if I realize that's a play on words, which we often hear, I can do hard things, but what the hard thing is doing easy things. So the process and the starting point is doing easy things, right? And so we want to start small and simple, small and easy. And so what I've built for you inside of No BS is a small stepwise process where you can choose your own adventure. If you feel called to work with your back, work with your back. If you're called to work with your knees, work with your knees. If you're called to work with stiffness all over, called and start there. So you don't have to start in a particular spot. Now, if you're looking at those three options and you're thinking to yourself, there's no way. There's no way any of that will work. Then this is what I'm going to offer up to you. Okay, you ready for it? Is we're going to take the shoulders and we're going to bring them to the ears. Okay? So we're just going to do this. Take the shoulders and bring them to the ears. Okay? And then bring them down. Okay? Now notice what you felt. Take your shoulders, bring them to your ears, and then bring them down. Okay, now notice if what you felt was tense or pain. Then, what I'd like you to do is to just raise them a little bit and then bring it in. And then bring it a little bit and then bring them down. Okay, now if bringing them all the way up worked, then you're gonna roll them back and then down. But if going all the way up was too much, then you're just going to take it here and then bring it down. Here and then bring it down. Or now really listen to my words. If you were able to do this with no pain, with no strain, then you can take them back. Okay? Okay, so simple. Okay, just post into the chat. Is that simple? Was that a simple movement? Really simple, yeah? Super, super simple. Easy. Simple. Yes. Anything else? Simple, good. Yes. Simple. Simple. Simple, 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 simple. Super simple. Yes. Super. No pain, says Annette. Brilliant. Okay, good. Simple, simple, simple. Okay, good. Okay. Roz says right shoulder can't do it. Perfect. Okay, good. So the key is then it's like you're noticing what can and what can't. Okay, so now let's do this. Drop your chin towards your chest. Toward, I didn't say to, I said toward. So just drop your chin toward your chest. Okay, and then bring it back up again. Okay, and then you're going to drop it down again. And then you're going to come up again. Okay, then you're going to take your ear, super simple. Like the mantra here is super simple. You're going to take the ear to one side and then you're going to come back up. You're going to take the ear to the other side and come back up. Super simple, easy. Super simple, easy. Super simple, no pain, easy. Okay, how are you doing? Super simple, no pain, no, easy? Yeah? Find the super simple, no pain, easy. Okay, and we're just gonna take a pause because sometimes, and I saw this further up in the chat, I think, sometimes it can be yes. So Sue's added, thank you for posting this. One of my problems is I start easy and it feels easy at the time, but then a day later, inflammation sets in and it kicks in my chronic pain, and then it takes 3 days to calm down. Totally. I Completely, completely, completely understand. Okay, so part of this process is to find the easier of easy. So if you're somebody who has a tendency toward chronic pain or you are living with chronic pain, then the key here is that I would like you to move in a range that does not increase your pain levels. And if you're someone who has occasional pain, then I'd like you to move in a range that does not increase your pain strain levels. Okay, now this gets a little bit tricky, right? Because you might have sensations in your body that you would absolutely and without a doubt have pain. You might also have sensations that you're not quite sure if those are sensations that are actually saying to you to go harder or to stop. Right? Because these sensations are kind of in the bucket of nebulous. I don't know really, but I think they're not trying to tell me this. But if you go one way or the other way, it could be like it could be anything. You could be in pain 2 days later. You could be in pain 2 hours later. You could be totally fine and feel great. So it can lead to a lot of confusion because it's difficult to be able to sometimes discern. So part of this process that I'm going to be walking you through over the course of this month and that you and I will have to experience together is being able to slow it down enough to determine what simple and easy means specifically for you. And so three posts here are brilliant. Elena says, hard to find the fine line between enough movement and too much. Okay, awesome. Annette adds, my brain will always tell me no pain, no gain. Brilliant. Rhonda adds, learning the difference between nerve pain or muscle pain. Okay, so because we're in the pain conversation, I've got something that I'm going to offer you, and I'm going to invite you into. Ready? I'd love for you to explore the idea of moving without increasing pain, whether it's nerve or muscle pain, and even moving with less stiffness when you are in a movement-focused part of your day. Okay, now let me be specific here. Those of you who have a chronic persistent state of pain. You are someone who you live and you're getting your life done, and there's pain that's a part of the process. So, what I'm suggesting to you is when you're carving out that part of your day where you are going to do the movement or do the exercise or fill in the blank, do like you're specifically doing that. In those moments, I'm offering and inviting you into a space to only move as far as there's no increase of pain or of stiffness. Now, difficulty is for those folks, it can be tricky because again, there might be some other sensations in there that you don't recognize as letting you know that those are actually indicators to say the pain's going to come on later, right? So here's what I want you to pay attention to. When you carve out that period of time, when you are getting moving, I would like you to follow your breath. And when your breath starts to get strained, I would like you to make it easier. Now, something in your head's going to say, that's not enough. I need to move more. Yes, down the road. Yep. But in these early stages, we need to build a foundation where you can discern the sensations that are in your body. Because if you just plow through, you're not going to have that chance. And so, to be able to discern between what sensations are letting you know that pain or that increase of inflammation is happening and not, not, I lost my train of thought there. If you're not able to discern that, then you're not able to discern that, right? And so being able then to find a more periods of time with less or no pain starts to become very, very, very difficult. In order to get to a place where you have a little less pain, and then a little less pain, and then a little less pain, and then a little less pain, to get there, you need to discern what a little less pain feels like. So if you're always moving into this place of no pain, no gain, or just keep moving, which is fine for the rest of your day, but when you're carving out this time to move and like, let's get moving, when you're carving out that time in that moment, in those moments, pay attention to your breath. Slow yourself down enough to tune into what's going on with my breathing right now. And if you can do that over the next couple of weeks, you will start to understand or gain an awareness over some of the signals and sensations. So I will often call like pain is a scream or it's a red light. If you think about a traffic light standard. And then there's the yellow lights. And then there's the green lights. So when we're in pain or inflammation or strain, that's like red. That's like the stuff telling us to stop. The yellow is letting us know the red's about to come. So it's the warning, like where some people just push on the gas and drive through those yellows. What I'd like to teach people is to discern whether you are at a stale yellow or a fresh yellow. So then you can kind of discern between being able to push or needing to slow down. And then there's the green, which we're not ever always in green because there's always a fluctuation, but you're able to feel and perceive more between those yellows and green and between the yellows and reds. And if you don't like that analogy, it's the same idea with screams and whispers. So you might have a body that's screaming after you do movement or even right now while we're talking. And our aim is to help you get to those whispers, to be able to feel and hear those whispers. Because when you come into this place that's a little bit more simple and easy, where you can slow down a little bit more, you're able to tune in to those other sensations that are letting you know, okay, now is the time to push a bit more. Now is the time to actually take a break. Now is the time to do exactly what I'm doing. So that's a big thing about learning the difference between pain and just working hard. But you have, in order to get there, you've got to build out the foundation. So if we kind of play around now with fingers, for example, and you can have them up by your face, you can have them down at your hands. I'm just going to have them here so you can see me on my screen. It's just move your fingers. Okay, now move your fingers and notice what your breath is doing right now. Okay, now stop the movement of the fingers. Now let's bring your hand, place it below your breastbone, right? So breastbone is here, okay? So just at the upper part of your belly, just below your breastbone, okay? And I want you to look at a point, whether it's on the screen or whether it's in behind me at my painting or whether it's somewhere on your wall. And I want you to look at that point and I want you to focus on it. Focus on it so hard that you can almost feel like your eyes are squinting. And what do you feel underneath your hand? And then look at that same point, but allow your eyes to be more expansive. So you're able to take in more of what's around that same spot you're looking at, but you can still focus on that spot. And now notice what's going on underneath your hand. And was there a difference? And if there was, what was the difference? If you need to go back and forth, you can go back and forth between really focusing on a point and then allowing to be more inclusive. So it's being exclusive to a point and then being inclusive to a point. And what happens underneath your hand? Okay, more relaxed the second time. My muscles are more relaxed when my eyes are more open. Okay, so Anne, did you hold your breath in both of them or in more so in one? Deeper breath, says Annette, when not as focused. Tension when squinting. Warmer when focused. Relaxed second time. I was focused on the picture and forgot my hand. Awesome. Holding my breath in the first one. Okay, so do you st are you seeing a trend here? Held when focused. I didn't hold my breath, but the breath was easier with the second. Okay, are you seeing the trend? Okay, so now come back to your hands. Allow your eye gaze to soften. And does the movement of your hands change at all? And again, your hands can be lower. I'm just having this so you can see my hands. Okay, then come back to your shoulders. Can you allow for that open focus when you start to raise your shoulders? And I don't want you to force it, but notice, or so in order not to force it, notice as you bring your shoulders up when your eyesight or your focus narrows, okay? And do you feel that narrowing, and can you feel a corresponding other series of sensations or a sensation? It's like they're a breath held. Okay. And then maybe you're doing the small ones. Maybe you're doing small ones. Maybe you're doing the rolls. But notice as you're doing those rolls, or as you're just lifting up and down, the difference between allowing your view to be more expansive, your breath to be softer, anything different in your movement. Right, Audrey, not as tense. Okay, so then where you can go is taking your ear to one side and your ear to the other side. Taking your chin down and chin up. And again, notice the distinction with your breath. So Mary's noticing her movements are more fluid. I tense my shoulders so much of the time, I have to really concentrate to relax them. Okay. Held breath on way up, relaxed on way down. So now, Mary, what would it take for you to relax your breath, or ha like, so you're going to be breathing as you move them on the way up, but if you had a relaxed breath on the way up, is it a smaller range to start with? Okay, so now some of you might be noticing that you can have easier and simpler movement when you have a smaller range, whether it's a smaller shoulder roll, whether it's a smaller movement through your head, side to side, or chin down and chin up. And that might be initially a little bit frustrating. Because you might think you need to have a bigger range in order to move. So, this is something that I want to share that's important. When we are living out there in our day-to-day lives, we need to live our lives and do our things, get the groceries, pick up the kids, get the dog food, pat the dog, all the things, right? And we're just going to need to move the way we move in order to get things done. And again, when you carve out the time to do the movement, and you can start with, okay, where is my breath now? Where is my breath now? Gentle focus, more intense focus, or more exclusive focus, inclusive focus. Exclusive focus, inclusive focus. And then in your own body, can you notice exclusive focus, inclusive focus, exclusive focus, inclusive focus? And then move in the range where you can help maintain that more relaxed, open range. Okay, now I want to answer that piece where you might be thinking, but I'm not doing enough. Okay. This is setting the baseline because when you do more, when you're in that carved out window, don't worry about the rest of your life. This is this carved out period of time where you're moving very, very specifically. Okay. If you continue to move in an exclusive way, you're moving bigger, but you're doing it in a braced pattern, a gripped pattern, and in a compensated pattern. So you're building off of the patterns that you already have that are already contributing to the pain signals that you have. Does that make sense? So if you want to retrain those patterns, we get to start in a smaller way. And when we start in a smaller way, you are actually going to grow your range a lot more. So, saying this in a different way, I'm just going to have a seat. It's really, really hot here where I am. Okay. Is this okay? I was teaching a workshop the other day, and someone was doing a movement. She was taking her arms over her head, and her ribs were flaring when she did it. So, it looked something like this. Her arms are coming up overhead, but she was flaring her ribs to get her hands overhead. So, you can see. And when I push my ribs out, my shoulder joint isn't moving at all, but my hand is getting higher towards the sky. Yeah, do you see that? Okay. But I'm doing the movement from here. I'm not doing the movement from here. So between my brain and my brain is registering that's how I get my hand over my head. But that's not how your hand is meant to get over your head. It's meant to get over your head by moving your arm bone and your shoulder socket. So, if you keep moving in ranges that are more braced, you have more braced ranges. So, what she realized is she said, oh, so if I move in a smaller range of motion, I'm now moving better, but I'm not moving as far. Does that mean I'm always going to move in a small range of motion? And the answer is no. Because when you move in the small range of motion, you're no longer creatively compensating or bracing or gripping. And so you retrain the pattern. Much like when you start eating when you're hungry and stopping at enough, you retrain a pattern. Like all the other habits that you're learning here, right? You're learning how to retrain a habit. You're learning how to retrain a pattern. Then, because we know you already have that full range expresses itself really very quite quickly, like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Really, it does not take long if you practice. But you have to recognize that if you want to move in ranges that are smoother and easier, you need to practice ranges that are smoother and easier. You won't get to a smoother and easier range if you continue to move with braced and gripping patterns. Does that make sense? Let me just check in with you. Does that make sense? Okay. So now it makes sense. So cognitively, it makes sense. The tricky part really is doing it. Yeah. So post in the chat, when do you think you will have the most trouble doing something simple like this? What will give you the most trouble? Rhonda's added, now I understand why my PT took me back to three simple exercises while with acute pain. Yes, awesome. Yeah, really, really good. Really good, Rhonda. You got a good PT. What will make, remember, we're not, I'm not asking you to move this way in your day to day. Really, really clear. So, Sue, when I see you write mornings, I'm not asking you to move this way when you're living your life. I'm talking about that period of time, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, when you're carving out that period of time where you're doing your movement, you're doing exercise. That's the only time I'm talking about. How you live your life is how you live your life. And it will ultimately bubble over into the rest of your life, but I don't want to change the way you live your life. I want to just help you with your movement. Okay? And this is really important because I don't want this to become another to-do item for you, right? You got enough of those, right? Let's keep it easy. Allow for what you do here, do its work, and it will translate elsewhere. Okay. So Christy has said, my brain is saying it's not enough. Yeah, awesome. Good. How do I overcome pain when trying to kneel on my knee replacement knee? Okay, great. Trying to keep up with a program or watching the people around me, it looks so wimpy. Yeah, I totally get that. I totally get that. Okay, so most people who are practicing when you're in a group class are compensating too. Most people in a class are bracing and gripping. I was in a what I thought was going to be a yoga class on Friday, ended up being a boot camp. Why I didn't realize it was a yoga class at the new studio that I'm going to here in my city. I just signed up. I just kind of like I got a 2 week pass, try everything I wanted to try. And I just kind of slotted myself into the time slot that worked. And I get there and she goes, this isn't a yoga class. This is a sculpt class. And I'm like, oh boy. Okay, here we go. And when we got to the core section, when we finished the core section, there was this collective exhale. So here's the thing. If people are collectively exhaling when they finish core work, what do you think they're actually doing? If they're collectively exhaling, like, oh, do you know what they did? Held their breath. Exactly, Elena. And if they're holding their breath, they're not actually building great core stability because breath is vital to core stability. So I'm not sure if this helps, Amy, when your brain says this looks so wimpy, because what's actually happening is you're actually training better, likely, than what the other people are doing around you. And Amy, yeah, yes, exactly. They are, listen, yeah, same Amy. They must be overcompensating. Totally, yes. So they might be looking like they're doing more and doing better than you, but they're actually being less efficient and less effective with their bodies. And chances are they're the kind of people, not and no judgment, no judgment, is they just want to push and power through. Okay? So, does that help, Amy? Does that help your brain at all? Perfect. Okay, good. Okay. Okay. So then when Christy is saying it's not enough. Absolutely. I totally get that one. So, again, the key about getting to a place with enough and to know what enough is, right? Like, let me ask you this. And this goes for everybody who has that thought pattern. When you were first starting to learn, and maybe some of you are continuing to learn, or it's a new thing you're learning about stopping at enough, did you have to kind of figure out what enough was? Like, did you have to sort of sense into what was a hunger and what was enough? So then, you have to figure out what enough actually is. Yes. So it's like, yes, says Rhonda, it wasn't automatic in the beginning. I figure it out every time I eat. Exactly. So with the frozen shoulder situation, do I go into the pain place right before it? Okay. So we'll deal with some conditions in a minute. Okay. So the enough place then is very, very, and I loved actually what Annette said there because it really is like just like with eating, enough is different every time she eats. enough is different every time you get into a movement practice. Because enough is going to be somewhat determined by what it is that you're feeling and how much sleep you got and how rested you are and how chaotic things are and what you're maybe training for or not training for, or like what your situation is around knee replacements or osteoarthritis or osteoporosis and all the things. Like there's a lot of factors that play into enough. And you've got to sense into what those feelings of enough are. Because sometimes our perception of what enough is based off of, and I might be dating myself, but it's based off of when Arnold Schwarzenegger was like Mr. Olympia. And the reason I bring him up is because before Schwarzenegger, people, the Mr. Olympias did not have abs the way that he created abs. Since Arnold Schwarzenegger's day as Mr. Olympia, abs became a thing. Six pack, eight pack, all that became this thing. And then Jane Fonda came around and it was like, make it burn. And it's just kind of taken off since then, right? The perception of enough is actually based off of information that now what we know about training is actually different than when your brain conceived what enough to be. Yeah, does that make sense? So it's like what we know, like even like when you look at elite athletes used to be pushed and 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 pushed. And now they rest and rest and rest and rest and rest and rest and rest. One other little piece, little nugget that might really help your brain is that in Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Outliers, he talked about a study that was done on how you gain mastery. And how you gain mastery, according to the study, was 10,000 hours of practice. Now, that was spoken about, and then people read the book. It was a bestseller. So then everyone started talking about this 10,000 hours mastery stuff. But, and here's the but, they missed out on two very, 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 three very, very important pieces. They said 10,000 hours of practice. But the study talked about 10,000 hours of deliberate practice. Specific practice. That's number one. The second is they didn't speak about rest. Rest. Those people who are using those 10,000 hours of deliberate and specific practice also had 13,600 hours of rest. And I'm going to get this next number slightly wrong, but it's about 32,000 or 36,000 hours of sleep. So, as much as I love Malcolm Gladwell, when he talked about that study and referenced that study, he only took one little microcosm of that. And it fed into our culture's nature of doing, 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 and not resting, 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 resting. But the more we now know about the way our brain is wired and what our body needs, now resting is becoming a more understanding necessary thing, as is deliberate practice. So it's not necessarily just going balls to the wall and having the feeling that you're getting and being active. It's being deliberate and specific with what you're doing. Okay, now one way about being deliberate is to check in with your breath. So before you get going into whatever movement practice you're doing, whether it's the videos that are posted on OBS, whether it's something else that you're doing on your own, is take a moment, place your hand at the bottom of your breastbone, or just sense into your breath. Take it expansive, take it narrow. Notice what it is that you're perceiving. And then, can you then do your workout within that spaciousness of deliberate practice in an expansive view of yourself and what you're feeling in your body? Whether you're taking one ear to one side and then the other side, whether you're taking your chin to the chest, whether you're taking mini shoulder lifts or shoulder rolls, wherever you are at with your movement practice. Okay, cool. Okay, questions that are coming up. Okay, just gonna close my door. There was one question that I saw about frozen shoulder. So the thing with frozen shoulder is, without knowing much about you and what's happening for you, my experience with frozen shoulder is that I typically don't work the shoulder that is adhesed. Instead, what I focus more on is helping people twist better, side bend better, and work lower down in their body, but with easy breath. And to keep reducing the amount of strain that's happening through their rib cage. So if you're finding yourself bracing a lot through your rib cage, can you dial that down? Like, allow your breath to become easier. There's a strong correlation between adhesions starting to release and the ability to rotate better between your ribs and your pelvis and your ability to side bend, so long as you don't force it. But then also connect with your lower body. But can you allow yourself and you enable yourself to kind of like down regulate a little bit, like relax a little bit while you're actually moving? Okay, cool. All right. Then there was a question, and let me know, you can keep posting some condition-based questions here or other questions around the movement piece. There's another question about total knee and getting down to the floor. Okay, so now here's the thing that's really cool about knees. Here is the knee. The only thing unique to this knee is this guy, the kneecap. The top of the knee is the bottom of the hip. The bottom of the knee is the top of the ankle, because this bone connects to the ankle, but it also connects to the knee. The bottom of the, or the top of the knee connects to the, this is part of the bone that connects to the hip. Okay. So what happens at your hip and what happens at your ankle have an impact on what happens at your knee. So the focus here then is, can you improve your movement in around your hips? And can you improve it in around your foot? So if you go to the knee video and even the back video and even the stiffness video, you will find things that you can do to start that process of helping to improve how you move around your hip and your leg and your foot and your ankle. And that will be the start of the process, because to get you down to the floor, so long as the mechanics, as I mentioned earlier in the call, there's some mechanics of knees based off of the person and their health and what their goals are. There's some mechanics of the knee that really limit the range of motion of the knee. So there's only so much range that will become available. But it sounds like you've got the range or some of it. You just don't like putting pressure on that. But to get down to the floor, you need to move through your hip and your ankle and your knee. So if you don't have that movement through the hip and the ankle, that's going to be really tricky. So I would start with the back of the knee program and or the stiffness program, and this and start to work through those and see what you start what starts to happen. Yeah. Okay. Is chair yoga helpful or not? It's absolutely helpful. Yes, she says by waving her skeleton around. Yes, it is. The only thing that I would watch for is it making sure that you're breathing, obviously, when you do the movement, and the intent behind what the movement is. So if it's a supportive place to start your movement from, that's a great place to begin. And then you can also use the chair to grow your capacity at moving. Yeah, so then you can be in standing and hold onto the chair and start to balance a little bit holding onto the chair. Then you can come down and sit back into the chair and do supportive work sitting in the chair. Yeah, chair yoga is great. Yeah, it's really, really great. The videos, I'm gonna let Coach Lisa talk about where the videos are because she knows your platform of where to find them. Okay, so the when we're so the people who are asking about back issues, whether sciatica, lower back issues, is come into the back program. And then again, I'm gonna keep saying this over and over again. No matter what program you do, allow your vision to be expansive about yourself and watch that you don't get too narrow. Because when you get narrow, you hold your breath. When you hold your breath, your nervous system starts to escalate into a stress response. So we want to help facilitate you being in a relaxed response while you're moving, while you're exercising. So that you can tune into the signals that let you know when you need to slow it down, when you need to stop, and when you need to push. That's the most fundamental thing that you can do. So when someone was asking about how do you prevent rotator cuff injuries, that's the first step. Because the first step to preventing any kind of injury is to notice when you're about to do something that's going to be too far. And being able to stop before you go into that too farness. So whether you are adding too much load to your free weights or to your machine weights or to the reformer or to what you're doing with yoga, there's little indicators that are letting us know, and the indicators are from our body. They're letting us know that we're going too far. But to get to that place to recognize them, you've got to slow down to start with. Not always, just for a few weeks. Start doing that for a few weeks and then begin to see what you notice. And then you start to pay attention to those whispers or to those yellow lights, whichever analogy works better. Okay. After my second posterior hip replacement, my glutes never really recovered. It seizes up and alters my hip alignment, and then I can't walk correctly. Where do I need to start to solve this? For background, my surgery sequence was left hip, right knee, right hip. It's the right glute that's the problem. Okay, I am going to have a chat with Yasmin about adding in a glute piece to this. Because I can, the back and the knee program is a place, Mary, for you to start. And we can always have a I can give some more specific ideas around some glute work that you can do. But you know what? Let's do this to start with. Okay. You're sitting or standing. We'll do this to begin. This was actually done at a study out of Wichita. And what they did is they had people sitting and then watch my head relative to my painting behind me. See how I lift? Now, the reason why I'm lifting is I'm squeezing my butt and then I'm relaxing. I'm squeezing my butt and then I'm relaxing. Now, squeeze, but only squeeze as much as there's no pain. Squeeze and then release. So, no pain allowed. Because you might be like squeezing, like you're trying to squeeze the juice out of a lemon, right? Don't do that. Just squeeze and then release. Squeeze and then release. Now, in this particular study, what they were doing with people is that these are people who weren't very mobile, weren't very active, but when they did about 10, about 200 squeezes over the course of the day, you can break those squeezes up, they started to get more tone into their glute muscles. So you can start with that, right? So you squeeze, hold, and then release, but no pain allowed, no strain allowed, and make sure you're breathing. Okay? Okay, great. Where does strength training fit in with running? Oh, there's one here. I want to keep running, but I need to add in strength to improve. Should I run and strength train on separate days? If I do it on the same day, how long in between? I run first thing in the morning. Okay, that's a tricky question, Tammy, because there's a few factors that are involved. One is what your day looks like. The second is what your overall desired outcome is for your training goal. And really what we would include for strength training. So I need to buffer my answer with there's a depends in there, right? So that's what it depends on. You could do every other day of strength training. That would absolutely work. And you can also do short bursts of strength training later in your day. And again, it depends. You don't actually have to do big strength in order to support your running. Where you really need to focus is on your outer hips, your inner thighs, and your rotators. Like those are key areas. So there were some studies that were done on injured runners, and all injured runners, like 100% of the injured runners, also got had like all of them, no matter what their injury was, shin splints, knees, ankles, plantar fasciitis, hips, you name it, all traced back to their hips. So when people work through their outer hip and their rotators and their inner thighs, when they started working those, that's when things really changed. Okay. Okay, really good, Mary. Thank you. This is awesome. I've been in PT for 2 years and no one has ever started back at this level. So everything hurts too much to do it. I hurts and I don't do it. Of course, you're not going to do it. I totally get it. I totally get it. So this is a place to begin for sure. Yeah, for sure. Okay, perfect. Good. Today I might be using the stairs. Fine with my knee replacement and my left knee that's iffy, then the next time I can be a challenge to use the same stairs again. I have to change the way I move up and down. Yes. So the there's I'm trying to think of the words to use that are broad. Typically, when we are looking at the rehabilitative processes post knee replacement, the focus is on the outcome of getting your knee bending and straightening again and being able to do the basic activities of daily living. And sometimes there isn't a focus on some of the other tasks outside of the activities of daily living. And the reason for that, the tendency is, and this is what I've noticed with the clientele I've worked with, is the tendency is that the post-op team wants you to get back to life. So once you get back to your life, then you graduate from that, but there still can be a lack of understanding of those other movements and that like climbing stairs and coming off the stairs, yeah? So that can be tricky. If you begin with the knee program and the back program that are in the BS portal, or no BS portal, then I think you're gonna get some ideas of things that you can play with. Another thing that I'm just gonna plant a seed for, because I can't see you move, so it's tricky, right? It's a tricky thing for me to say, okay, give this a go, is start to roll at the bottom of your feet with a tennis ball. Just a couple times during the day for like just 1 minute each time and see what starts to happen if you roll out your foot with a tennis ball. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. I can stick around for longer if that's all right with Lisa and the crowd. I'm good to stick around for another 15 minutes to answer these questions. Happy to do so if that's okay with you. All good with you. Okay, great. Okay, perfect. Good. Yeah, I can keep going. Okay. So overall, I'm going to keep working through these and I see some in the Q&A. Overall, where I'd like you to begin is over in the No BS portal. Like start with those. And then I'll talk to Yasmin about adding a couple other things in there for you, and then we can kind of play from there. I actually later this month, I'm leading within my own business a multi-hour knee program, and I do a lot of work with people who are post knee replacements and have osteoarthritis and all the things. And so it's really a focus for, like I mentioned, like post-op. The focus of the post-op team is to get you back to your activities of daily living, right? That's their focus. And so there tends to be a missing piece for the rest of your life. So people will often come to me because they're limping still, or they got some balance stuff still, or, and all that stuff needs to be retrained, but that's not the focus of post-operative care. If your team even suggested post-operative care, because there is some mixed research about post-operative care and if someone should just start walking, and there's all sorts of stuff there. So it just depends on what kind of care you got and the direction you got from those folks. So that's there's we can kind of play with that. Okay, let me go into Q&A and then I'll come back to the chat. Okay, we got the strength training. The issue of getting up from the floor after falling a problem with hip movements? It can be, Patty. It certainly can be. But I think, Patty, there's more to that question that you're asking. Because to get up from the floor, if you're sitting on the floor requires you to twist and then get up. So there's like getting up off the floor is a whole body movement. And when there's been a knee replacement or a hip replacement, or there's issues in the hip or issues in the knee, those can be friction points to be actually being able to rotate your body, right? And then actually get your hand over and to get yourself up. So it's a matter of getting more of your body to a more functional place. I know that sounds very, very vague, but if you start with what we've got in the portal, in your Anobias portal, that will be the start of a process for you. Okay. Okay, cool. All right, let's slide up here a little bit because I saw a few here. What recommendation might you have to get cardio in when chronic pain is an issue? Will it come more naturally after this retraining, gentle movement, or can it be in addition to this now? Okay, so Sue, I've got a sometimes a different view on other people when it comes to how much someone moves with chronic pain. So like just get that where my lens is and where my bias is. And so take it for what it's worth. It might not be the right answer for you. I think so. I just really, really, really want to state that. I love working with people with chronic pain because I love helping them reduce it. And I love helping people reduce pain. It sounds so, I realize as I say that it sounds so goofy, but it's so great. It's so great because there's really so much available for people in terms of reducing pain. And it's just not a conversation that's out there. So it's even more fun when it happens because it happens all the time. Of a reducing and even an eliminating of pain. But because our culture is one that doesn't acknowledge pain, or it's like, just take this pill, keep going, right? Like, that's just the culture. So I tend to be the kind of person who says, and I've said this a couple times already, live your life, do your things of your daily life, and then carve out a period of time, 5, 10, 15 minutes to start off the process if you're just starting. Simple, easy, inclusive ways of feeling your body versus exclusive. Yeah. And so then when you are walking around, is if you have a chronic and persistent state of pain, is can you use those things that I've just taught you to feel and learn to sense into what those sensations are? What's going on with your breath? Like, your breath's the one of the greatest indicators of when it starts to get a little bit more too labored for breathing. That's likely going to be an indicator that you're well past the point. But if you can do your cardio without your pain levels increasing, because here's one thing about chronic pain and persistent pain, is that it exists in the space between your brain and your tissue, because our brain interprets these pain sensations that we have. And how we interpret them has a big impact on the way that we feel them. So pain exists, it's real, but then how we interpret it either ramps it up or maintains it in a way. So there's a real connection between those two things. So if you keep moving with more pain, you are giving that stimulus to your brain that that's the normal way to move. And guess what it's going to give you back? More pain. But if you move in a way that has your pain less or not there, or you just don't let it increase, that's still a different stimulus that's going back to your body or back to your brain, rather. And then guess what your brain gives you back? It gives you back less pain. Think of it this way. I used to use this analogy all the time, that when we have a stew or a soup or a sauce and it's too spicy, in order to reduce the spice, do we add more spice? We have more spice, there's more, it's gonna be more spicy. So if we have pain and we add more pain, we're gonna get more pain. But then if you add more tomato or more water or more fluid or more meat or more whatever, that brings the spiciness level down, right? So when we add something different than pain, it brings the pain levels down. Yeah. So think about that analogy in your movement, right? And you'll find that you're, because if you keep training pain, you'll keep getting more pain. Yeah. Okay. Let me know if that's helpful. Okay. Okay. Let's see where we're at. That's the glue question. All right, so any tricks for releasing impinged nerve in the back to affect the hip? Okay, so yeah, I'm not a trick person. I'm a retraining person. So I don't do a lot of tricks. So you won't find me on Instagram with like, do this exercise or stop this and fix this, right? You won't find me doing that. But I will help you retrain so that the way that this leg bone moves in your pelvis moves better, so the tissue responds differently, and so then that trapped nerve doesn't have to be so trapped anymore. That's what I will help you do. Yeah, that's why I'm way better at doing that. There's other people who are better at doing the fun fixes, like the tricks, the trick fixes, whereas the quick fixes are great. They're kind of like Advil, right? They give you that relief, but then they don't stick around. You need to do them again. So I'm more about the use the quick fix or use the Advil as you need. I'm all a fan for that. But then let's also help you retrain in the process so that the pattern actually changes. Because when you change the pattern, you change the experience. Yeah? Okay, cool. Okay, I think I'm getting you. Okay, I'm down here now. Okay, good. So I'm glad that was helpful. I walk about 2 hours daily. Way to go, Mary. About 1.5 in the morning and 30 to 45 in the evening. Sometimes my lower back hurts. Should I be doing something pre or post walk to help? Okay, so what I would start with, Mary, is try out like whichever of the three videos that I've got up on the portal, whatever one calls to you, give that one a go and see if that makes a difference when you are walking. Because the thing about walking, here I'm going to bring up my skeleton kit. The thing about walking is actually like a PhD topic. Like you can look at like nanosecond like of the gait pattern. Like it's crazy, okay? For me, I look at three to four things. And those three to four things actually are related to two things mostly. Okay, so if I have my skeleton here, hold on, let me bring this back over. If I have my skeleton, I'm just gonna take a look here. If I have my skeleton here, just gonna check my audio settings for a second. Okay, I'll bring that back up. Okay, so if I have my skeleton here, I'm just gonna come back so you can see more of it. All right, so when we're walking, we're moving the leg bone in the socket like this. Okay. Okay, now lots of people when they're walking, there's a lot of focus on the foot because the foot plants down and then you move forward, right? But the foot, look at where the foot's attached to. Whoop, the hip, right? So the amount that your leg bone moves has a direct impact on where that foot lands. So if your hip doesn't move very far, you might be doing the shuffle, right? And that's coming a lot from the hip. Maybe the knee too, but a lot from the hip, because we need to transfer that the what's going on from one side of your body to the other side of your body in order to walk along. Okay, now this leg bone, it's swinging in the hip socket. So how much swinging capacity and ability does this leg bone have? Then what's going on in the pelvis? So we're looking at this connection, excuse me, between the leg and the pelvis. And this pelvis is a platform on which this leg swings. So then how stable is that pelvis? How mobile are those hips? Okay, so then We look at the ribs to the pelvis connection because when we're walking, this part of our body, we rotate our body as we move our legs. So if we don't rotate very well, then we're not going to walk very well. And if we're holding our rib cage really tight because we're not breathing really well, that's going to impact as well. So we've got rib cage, pelvis, leg bone, and then it's like pelvis, the connection between these two, and the connection between these two. So it's like those are the key factors that impact walking. Now you might be wondering why I didn't mention arms. Arms get involved, but these are the pieces: pelvis to rib cage, or sorry, rib cage to pelvis, pelvis stability, and pelvis to leg bone, and how that leg bone swings. Okay, so now when you're out walking, what I want you to notice is prior to your stiffness happening, it was stiffness that you said. Sometimes my lower back hurts. So prior to the hurting happening, notice if you're holding your breath. Notice if you started to shuffle. Notice if like your movement of your legs started to shift. Those three things: breath, shuffle, if something in your pelvis started to shift. Notice if if any of those things, that's your data. And then bring that data. Go to ask a coach or come into the Facebook group. And let me know about what you noticed about that data. Then do one of those videos, whichever one calls to you, and see if that changes the data. But once you've got the data and then you start to act on it, then you can start to make the change. Okay, does that help, Mary? Okay, perfect, Mary. Okay, I'm looking forward to hearing more about about how that goes. And if you po post your question, ask coach or on Facebook, let me know, and I'm excited to see what happens. All right, brilliant. Good, good, good. Okay. Okay, so Danielle, where I would start, since I don't know enough about your scenario with this, with your syndrome and De Quervain's, is begin with the stiffness video in No BS, okay? I love it, Roz. Spent day over hunched over at the computer. Yes, I love it. Good, good, good. Okay, looking forward to taking the course. Is super, Rhonda. You validated the slow pace my PT put me on. Rest is the hardest. Ah, that's great. And then Carolyn got you on that one, Rhonda. You may want to adjust your thought. How about rest is part of my healing process? Oh, you guys are so awesome in this group. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. So, greater trochanter syndrome. Okay. So, also keep in mind, I'm going to keep saying this, is I don't know who the person is who has the syndrome or the condition. So, I'm not thinking about the condition. I'm thinking about the person who has the condition, but I don't know enough about you who has the condition. So, I'm giving you my best ideas, okay? Based off of what I know about No BS and you guys and all that. So, what I would do for the greater trochanter is I would feel into your body of like, what's the better idea, the stiffness video or the back video? So, when you get there, feel where your body is pulling yes toward, and then practice that. And again, remember this notion of inclusive, exclusive, follow your breath. Because greater trochanter syndrome can absolutely change. Remember, syndromes are named syndromes because there's a collection of symptoms that fall into a bucket, but they don't really talk about mechanics or movement. Right. So when you start to learn how to move better, that can actually change quite a bit. Yeah. Okay. I think I've got a lot of these. I love it, Rhonda. Carolyn, you're exactly right. It's been a challenge since I messed up my spine when preparing for a movie, for a move, leaving pissed in the past since my fall. Not used to being still yet. It's working. Okay, great. Perfect. So the cool thing is you can be, I love the idea, you is the and both. You can be pissed off and you can be, no, it's you really then the past. But you can be pissed off and see that it's working. You can be those two things too, and you can be not used to being still and yet notice that it's working. Those two realities can exist cohesively, yes. Okay, good. I had two discs replaced in my neck, and ever since then I get headaches after doing upper body workouts or using my arms and shoulders a lot.
Yes. So, the tips I have for you is to start with is you might be adding too much load to your upper body workouts, and you're starting to like the muscles in and around your neck aren't able to absorb the load as well as they could have like years and years and years ago before you started having the need to have a disc replaced. So you might be, even though you can do the movements, you might be loading up too much. Now, I'm not one to say drop the load, but I do want you to notice your breath. That's my suggestion. You'll notice as you work more and more with me, I rarely say no, and I rarely say stop doing something because I don't want you to choose based off of what I say yes or no to. I want to teach you how to feel your body and have your body let you know what you should do. Do you see that distinction? So then it becomes less about Susie, the movement person, and it's about you and what your body is actually saying, because that's when real trust between you and your body actually happen. And you've got a ton of opportunity here because you're already doing the workouts, you're already doing a lot of good work. You just might be overdoing it. And the only way to determine if you're overdoing it for currently where you're at is to check in with your breath. So if you're like, like to do the lifting, you might need to drop the weight a little bit. You might, but sense into it for yourself. Here's the good news. For a lot of the men that I've worked with, I'm only telling you the story about the men because it's the memory that I have mostly of the men that I've worked with when they've dropped the weight, is they've been able to target parts of your body more effectively, and then those parts of their body got more toned. So what you might notice as you, and they really like that. Like they were like, these movements are so small, but why am I so toned, right? So you might actually notice that you get more tone because you're actually moving with more ease and you're more precise and deliberate in your movement. So while it might feel kind of weird to drop the weight, if that's what your body is actually asking for, you might actually get better outcomes because you drop the weight. And then you get the better outcomes, then you can add the weight again. Does that make sense, Cassandra? So you've got the capacity, and you need to, I think you might need just need to pay attention to what your body's actually saying. Okay, perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. I'll try to be more deliberate with my movement. Brilliant. Yes. Awesome. Perfect, perfect, perfect. I can't believe I have had my breath. I held my breath every day of my life, and I didn't understand what a personal tool I have in my, oh, I have had my breath every day of my life, and I didn't understand what a personal tool I have in my own body. I know! And so many people still hold their breath. Now, granted, breath holding and fear and stress and all that are all together, and there is a bit of stress and a lot of stress for a lot of people in lots of parts of the world right now. And so it makes sense, like, to really check in with it, because I've certainly worked with people who have been in moments that are really, really, really hard to process and that they're working through, and there is a tendency to hold their breath. So if your breath is held, it's okay. It's that you're noticing it. It wants you to notice. Breath work is key. Perfect. 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 Okay. Alrighty, perfect. So Cassandra's, I got your question answered. Are you familiar with with Charcot-Marie tooth syndrome? I have it, and it gets worse as I get older, and I'm on and off balance. Is the best exercise to do to help my legs get stronger so I can walk more normally? Okay, so I'm not familiar with Charcot-Marie tooth syndrome, but I can speak to balance. And that balance, there's three components to balance. One of them is in the inner ear. One of them is in our sight, and one of them is how our body moves. So, if you're noticing a relationship of the tooth syndrome to what's going on in your inner ear or your eyes, or like that, I'm wondering if that's actually what our relationship is, then you need to work with the other sense, whether it's eyes versus ears or ears versus eyes, and then also really improve the way your legs are moving. Yeah. So maybe what you can do to start with, and again, I'm hearing when you write, what is the best exercise to do to help me get my legs stronger so I can walk more normal? What I'm hearing is I want to get my legs stronger fast. And And usually fast is rough and slow is smooth and smooth is fast. Okay, let me say that again because it's kind of important. Fast typically is rough, slow typically is smooth, and smooth ultimately is fast. So if you can think about smooth movement and start with those videos in No BS, I think you'll start to see a direction for you. And then as you practice that, by all means, come in to ask a coach or ask coach and or the Facebook group. Probably the ask coach is probably the best place to do that. And then if there's a question that comes up, we can go from there. Okay, Rosita. Okay, fibromyalgia. There's a couple around fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia, the thing to really, really keep in mind around FMS, and this is probably the one thing that everyone I've worked with FMS has really been upset with me when I say this. And I say upset, meaning like not literally upset, but kind of sort of literally, is that people who have FMS tend to recover more slowly than people who don't have FMS. So the recovery rate is slower, and that's the part that they don't like to hear. And the other part is that typically that makes them like that they aren't satisfied with that because they typically are people who want to do more. And so then they want to do more and they want to do more. And when there's a good day, they don't know when the next good day is going to happen. So they typically do a lot of stuff in that good day because, well, heck, tomorrow might be a good day or a bad day. I don't know. Like, I don't even know what's going to be. So I might as well just get it all in that I can get in. So one of the things that I'm not sure if that helps Tracy or other people who've mentioned about FMS. I'm not sure if that resonates with you or not, or parts of it do. But I think the piece that becomes important is that is to recognize that you recover more slowly. So the amount of effort to put in while you're in the workout, you've really got to pay attention to. So I'm going to come back to the watch that exclusive inclusive and watch your breath and use those as measures and really like, I'm going to say really pay attention to your body. But even as I say that, that might be tricky because sometimes when there's chronic pain present, the last thing we want to pay attention to is our bodies. So if breath is something that's more inviting, or if and if noticing that inhale exhale is more inviting, we start there. And then by all means, as you play with that and you work with it with maybe the stiffness video in the portal, maybe start there and then go and then we can build from there. Okay, and Carolyn, I am so sorry. I asked, and I'm sure there's a few others. I thought I caught the ones further up. I asked a question in the chat about 15 minutes ago about regarding a mid-back spasm. That just happened about an hour ago. Well, aren't you in the right place? I hope that wasn't while I was talking because that was, oh, but when, maybe it was just before we got going. Okay, so I'm not sure what contributed to the back spasm. I'm wondering what happens. Like, let's do this. I had to think about this for a little bit. There's a lot of different things that can be done. And again, I don't know what contributed to your back spasm. And if back spasm is a thing that happens for you. So if I sit back here a little bit more, if you're here, and whether you're in sitting or standing, bring the palms of your hands together and place your middle finger at your chin. And the reason for this is I don't want your chin to move. And then you take yourself into a twist. And then come on back and take yourself into a twist. Now, here's the thing. You can only move as far as you're breathing easy, right? That's been the big mantra that I've been sharing today, right? You can only move as far as you can breathe easily, right? No further than breathe. Like, you got to make sure that you're being honest about the breathing easier. So try that to begin. Okay? Try that to begin. Okay. Let's see. Okay, I'm just going through here. Ah, gotcha. It came in from gardening. I see. Thanks. I'm just scrolling down the questions. I was just out gardening and was bending over getting water into the watering can. No big deal. Then suddenly my mid-back started to hurt. It's not terrible, but seems a spasm has happened. Okay, so the gardening. Now, I live in a city where we have a very short gardening season, and so when my clients are gardening, it's like we kind of duct tape them because they're going to go like gardeners in my city go like full on, right? Because they have a short season and they want to grow what they grow. So I'm used to working with people who, when they garden, it's like a combat sport or no, con not combat. It's a contact sport, combat, con contact sport. And so it's intense, right? The way that they go about doing it. And if you are in a place where you've got a longer growing season and you can grow more often, there's still a lot of work that can be done, a lot of bending and twisting and down and up. So I think I chose well around the sitting twist. That might be a place for you to explore. The other is if you are someone who can get down to the floor and take your legs up a wall or on a chair or onto your bed and stick pillows underneath your legs to rest your back, that might be helpful too. But come back into your breath. A piece of the puzzle though too around not having happen in the future, and this is the tricky thing with gardeners, is because gardeners tend to go full on, the ones I know anyway, is you've got to pay attention to your breath. A big piece about how this happens is where the breath is. Now, there can be a movement, mobility, and strength piece to it, which you can build, but you've also got to build the breathing piece with it too. Okay. Okay, cool. All right. Okay, good. So you're the gentle type. Okay. And gardening is still intense, right? Like there's still a lot of bending and twisting and lifting. So before you just notice as you're into it, like where your breath is, right? Because it can be such a joyful pulling the weeds and getting into the mud and the dirt and all the things can be really, really great. And just kind of sense and time can go by so quick and you don't even notice where yourself is. So maybe every so often just check in with your breathing. And again, I'll talk to Yasmin about maybe posting something for gardeners. Okay, let me just make a note of that. Because I can maybe do something a bit more. Those of you who are gardeners, are you getting down to the ground? Are you getting down and kneeling on the ground or getting around? Like, are you able to get down to the ground? I guess is my question. And I'll talk to Yasmin. So we're looking at possibly doing gardening and glutes. Okay, we can maybe do some extra videos for that. Okay, there's another one up here too. Okay, I think there's one more here. Just gotta go up. There was one about, oh, where is it? I haven't answered your question, let me know. I thought I was catching them. I think I got them all. Okay. Ah, tripping question. Thank you. The tripping question was related to, is it my strength of my legs? I knew that was it. Or was it, aha, I seem to be tripping on steps. It feels like my shoe catches on the last step of a stairway. Are my legs weak and I'm not lifting my foot enough to climb stairs? Possibly, but maybe not. Okay, so let's come back here. Okay, so what we're looking at here is we're looking at this stair climbing idea. Okay, and we're moving in order to climb the stair, we've got to move that leg up and then step on it and then move. I don't have enough hands to do both. And then move that leg up and then step on it and then move the leg up and then step on it, right? So there's that. And so you're doing that, but then as you step on it and then swing this leg through, it could be that this leg is not as steady. And so then swinging this leg through
gets your foot gets caught. So that is a possibility. There's another piece to it too, and I would be interested in knowing two things about your body. The first one is, if you were to roll out your foot on a tennis ball or like a golf ball, that might be too small, but like a firm ball, like a lacrosse ball, excuse me, or a inside hockey ball, an indoor hockey ball, tennis ball, like your massage balls out there. I wonder, would your foot be like, ooh, that's kind of tight, or ooh, that feels really good? Like, that's the first thing. And then I wonder if you can, like, so if you can bring your foot up onto your knee, right? So if you are bringing your foot up onto your knee like this, and you were to kind of wiggle your toes around, or if somebody else had your feet in their hands and they were kind of wiggling their toes, would you be like, ooh, that's tight in there. Those toes are tight, right? Like, if you have that feeling, I'm wondering about that. I'm wondering if you aren't able to bring your foot up to your knee, but if you were just able to kind of move your you c can you move your toes, and then can you put your foot on the ground, and then just kind of like, here, let me show this to you. So if you have your foot on the ground, I'm gonna lift my leg up so you can see this. So if you have your foot on the ground, and then like take your toes and push them on, like, and just put them on the ground, and like kind of stretch your toes out on the ground, like, so you could be in sitting, and you just kind of put your toes like this and your toes like this, and you just, let's see if I can get this going with, hold on, let me do it with the foot, actual foot. One second here, let me grab my foot. Here we go. I have a basket of bones, no kidding. Okay, so if you're here, and then you are kind of moving your toes this way and then this way, so you're just kind of had on the floor, and we're playing that. If you were going to do ankle circles like this, and even play around with like doing A, B, C, D, right? Like, kind of play around. Would you kind of feel like, oh wow, my ankle, it doesn't really move very well, or oh, that feels really good. Like, notice those things with your foot. Let's start there. Okay. And let me know that. So if you want to do that, maybe do the stiffness video and then post in Ask Coach and what happens, like, what do you notice? So do you notice when you do the toes massage ball, like, or someone pulls your toes or massages your feet? Are your feet like, ooh, that's stiff, or ooh, that feels really good, or both, or nothing? Right? Give me that information. We can kind of work from there if you want. Okay. Into Ask a Coach. Okay. All right. All right. Let's see. I do have a basket of bones. I should show you my big basket of bones. Yeah. Okay, good. Cool. I'm hurting just watching that. I get electric shocks in my feet when I move a certain way. Okay, so that was a question related to Susan. So Susan, so if someone is like kind of pointing the toes, and those are electric shocks in the feet when you move in a certain way, there's other things that maybe are important for you to do. Okay. So Tracy, I would suggest playing around with the stiffness or the knee or the back video. Okay. Okay. I think this will be my last question. I think we're almost there because the pace is starting to slow, but it feels like one of the bones below my knee slips out of the joint sometimes. It hurts until I get it to slip back in. I try to be careful so it will not happen. Is this something that requires surgery? Okay, so I'm not a physician, and I'm not a surgeon, and I'm not a physical therapist, so that's like way beyond my scope. However, what I can say is that there's a lot that can happen with better movement, because when you have better movement, muscles engage more effectively. And when muscles engage more effectively, bones tend to stay more stable. Okay, but I can't specifically address the surgical piece. One way to think about it, though, is that even if you were to have surgery, you'd still have to do movement later. So, as one of my clients who was thinking about having knee surgery, his physician said, you might as well
learn how to strengthen in and around your hip and your knee and get all the function better, because you're going to have to do it anyway, even if I was to do surgery on you, and you're not really a surgical candidate, right? Because we can sometimes think, and I don't think you're thinking this per se, but we can sometimes think, oh, surgery will actually make it better. And it can, but we still need to do the recovery process and the exercise process post-surgery in order for it to work really, really well. Yeah, that's what I see all the time with people who are post hip and knee surgeries, is that continuation of the retraining process, because the habits that were part of what contributed to the surgery being needed, right? And not maybe not contributed, but correlated is a better word, because once you start to limp and once you start to offset and compensate for a hip and knee that's needing surgery, that becomes a pattern. And people can sometimes think, oh, I'm now off the table. I've had the surgery. I should walk fine. That rarely happens, because walking is a habitual pattern. And so it has to be retrained, or you're going to consistently limp later, right? That's just an example about post-recovery care. And that's not something that a lot of post-op people, like a rehab, focuses on, because it's not their focus. Their focus is getting the person moving again and back to life, right? I can help people stop limping, right? But that's like, that comes after the graduation, post-op, yeah. But the point being, with what I'm saying with you, the point being is that like, even if you were to have surgery, you would still have to get stronger and get things more functional anyway. Yeah. So where I would start is start with one of those videos. And for all of you, really, even if you've got back pain and you look at, like, you're kind of looking at the videos, but you're more inclined to do stiffness, then do the stiffness first, right? And just feel, like, practice feeling what your body is called to doing and go there, and then see what happens. And if questions arise, by all means, populate that Ask Coach and they will relay the questions to me. I can come back. I'll talk to Yasmin about adding a gardening and a glutes video for you too inside the portal. I'm really at your service over this next month. We've got another call happening in August. And if you would like to have another one of these, I'm happy to do it too. I can also talk to Yasmin about that as well. I'm happy to be here, happy to help you get moving again and really feel better again, because there is absolutely no doubt a way for you to get moving again, reduce pain, feel good, get stronger, all those things. All righty. So you have fun getting moving again. Carve out that time, last little bit of cheerleading for you. Be inclusive with your breath, not exclusive. Notice when you're being exclusive, allow your breath to be easy. All right. All right. Thank you all. You have a great rest of your day. Take good care. Mwah. See you. Bye-bye.